Your Starbucks is ready. Beans ground, milk frothed, shots pulled. Velvety milk poured into a double shot of dark perfection and... oof, that's the good stuff. The baristas are ready. The finest coffee beans are ready. The Starbucks you love is ready. Hello again from the Starbucks Coffee Company.
Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. I'm going solo. Obviously, this is my solo episode for the week, so I appreciate all the support, obviously. First recap, we had Marty McSorley come on the show this week, and holy moly, you know, you talk to people all the time. Well, I do, especially people in hockey, and then you come across people who you just, they're savants. They just... think at a higher level than everybody else. And that's Marty McSorley. I've known him for a few years now, 5, 6, 7 years. And he just does things differently. He marches to the beat of his own drum. He's not on anyone's agenda and he doesn't really care what other people think. And you get that luxury when you're at a status of him, you know, multiple Stanley Cup winner, obviously a part of the Oilers dynasty, part of the Wayne Gretzky tenure in the LA Kings, and just he has that luxury to be able to say no, like that's not true, or no, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to do this. He just does what he wants, and it's such a freeing feeling that I don't have. I still have to be careful what I say, what I do, because I have people who depend on me. You know, I can't come out and just let it fly from the hip like I want to. I've been in trouble before with that, and I got my pee-pee whacked, and you know, here we are. So I try to be as honest as I can, but still at the end of the day, I got people to answer to. And Marty McSorley, God love him, he just doesn't care. And it's not a bad thing. He's not like he's saying terrible things, but boy, what a great interview. And he was just so insightful, so good. I need to have him on again, because I an hour goes by and you look at your agenda and you realize, gosh, I didn't ask him about, you know, the Donna Brashear thing, the illegal curve on a stick and the playoffs versus the Montreal Canadiens, all these things that I wanted to touch base on, all his fights that he had. He was a legend, obviously, like one of the best tough guys ever. We didn't touch on any of those. So I need to have him back on just because he was so good and we're getting great feedback. So I appreciate the support there, but oh gosh, this is a fantastic interview. So update on my life. I have a funny story. So I still am carless. I know I put a Twitter poll out there, like, what should I buy? What kind of vehicle should I get? I want a pickup truck. So I've been floating that idea for a while. Then all of a sudden, last minute, my wife goes, you know what? I don't want to get a pickup truck. And because I, like I just mentioned, have to be careful with my decisions. And I answer to somebody. Well, that somebody is my wife. She goes, well, I don't want to drive a pickup truck. And I go, well, you're not going to. This is going to be my car. She said, well, sometimes I'll drive it. And I don't like the idea of driving a big old pickup truck around. So I pivoted quickly and we are now going to get like a little mini SUV hatchback. I really like Volvos. I drove one as a kid. My first car was a 1998 gold Volvo station wagon. And then that went away. Then I got a Volvo when I was in my 30s, an XC90. Loved it. We actually donated that when I won the Honda Pilot. So that was, gosh, that was, to talk about a tough decision. It was a nice Volvo, fully loaded. And it was prompted by my wife. She goes, we just got this brand new car. Let's donate this to charity. So we gave that one away. And now I'm circling back for round three because I just love the car. So we went downstate. I had to pick up my kids who were visiting my wife's aunt. And I'm like, there's a great XC90 here. Let's go check it out. All-wheel drive, all this stuff. And so we went to the dealership and I showed up. And I hate to stereotype people, but it felt weird, right? I show up, the guy's got the Bluetooth thing in his ear. He's all sweaty. It didn't look right. And I show up and he brings the car around. And first of all, it just didn't match the pictures that were online. I start digging it a little more. It's not all-wheel drive. It's front-wheel drive. Like, there's no sunroof. It's just something smelt off. And so we drove all the way down there. I took it for a little, you know, spin. And I said, I'm out of here. I'm gone. And I did not buy the car. So that was last week. And here we are now. It's Friday, August 1st. And I'm still carless. But we're going to go to Grand Rapids on Thursday next week to hopefully pick up a car. I don't know, you guys. Driving this Volkswagen Jetta, it's so fun. I don't want to stop driving it. But my wife says, I can't drive stick. I'm like, who does it? Here's my question. All the parents out there or the people who have cars, do you know how to drive manual? And if you don't, why not? And if you do, do you just love it? Because I never drove a manual car ever growing up. It was always automatic. And I learned in college out of necessity because I didn't have a car and my roommate had one. So I just said, Jake Wilkins, teach me how to drive your manual Jeep. And he took me for a couple spins. I picked it up pretty quickly and away we go. And now I love it. So would you want to own a manual car? Because that's what I want. I want a manual pickup truck, either four on the floor or whatever. But I just can't. My wife doesn't drive it. And I heard actually the greatest security system for your vehicle is to just have a manual car because nobody can drive them. So the thief will come in, they don't know how to start it, they don't know how to drive it. So it's just, they're unstealable for a large portion of the population. So I don't know. But yeah, so hopefully next week we will have a new car. So moving on to this episode, it's tricky. I'm going to talk about something, you know, it's a little sensitive in the second half of the show. It's Hockey Canada stuff. And I wrestled with this for a long time, but I felt prompted to do it just because it's such a, the hockey culture is so, it's strong, you know, it's good and bad. There's great things about the hockey culture and there's also really bad things about the hockey culture. And I've managed to navigate through it somewhat unscathed. I've definitely been a part of some of the stuff, but not to the extent of what's going on in that trial, the now, you know, acquitted players and the trial's over with. But I wanted to touch on that just because I am a father. I've been in that environment. I've talked to players who are actively suing the CHL, the Canadian Hockey League, and Dan Carcillo. I've talked to players who have lived in that environment. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about, especially I have a lot of parents listening with their kids. So that'll be the second half of this podcast. So I don't know if you want... I'm not going to go graphic, but I'm just letting you know, for the first half of this podcast, we're going to talk about the Canadian teams in the NHL, specifically the ones who I think can win the Stanley Cup. And obviously that's the Oilers, that's the Leafs. I think it's the Ottawa Senators and the Montreal Canadiens. I want to do the Vancouver Canucks as well, just because I feel like they have a chance, but I don't think the Flames, well, and obviously the Winnipeg Jets. So all the teams in Canada have a chance to win the Stanley Cup this year, but we're going to focus on, you know, the higher ups. You know, the teams that actually have a chance because, you know, does Vancouver have a chance to win the cup? Maybe. They did not make the playoffs last year, but maybe they can. Does Montreal have a chance? I think so. Do the Jets have a chance? I think so. So we're going to talk about which teams have a chance and why they will win the cup and why they won't win the cup. And we'll start right now with the team that's been to two straight Stanley Cup finals, the Edmonton Oilers. And it was interesting talking to Marlon McSorley. And picking his brain about why the Oilers haven't won the cup. Because he was adamant. We talked quite a while before we came on air. And he said they should have won the cup. Their team was good enough to win one of the last two Stanley Cup finals. Everybody, you know, throws Stuart Skinner on their bus. Everybody throws the lack of depth under the bus. But in his eyes, the real reason was, and he said it on the show, they don't trust the players. When things get tough, they just go right to McDavid and Draisaitl and they play them too much. And it's not fair to them. And it's not fair to the team because you have a great team through 82 games of the regular season. And all of a sudden you get to the playoffs and it's like, well, throw that out the window. We're going to roll with the big dogs. And I myself am guilty of saying you play them 35 minutes. That's all you have. But in Marty's eyes, it's like, well, you're going to burn them out. And I thought about that too, but it's like, do you have anything in the cupboard that's relatively good, that can win you a Stanley Cup, that can be productive? And I didn't think they did, but Marty thought differently. He thought they could have won a Stanley Cup in the last 2 years. But in my eyes, this year, why they will win the Stanley Cup, they have some youth. They have something exciting to put into the roster. And it's not bringing in vets who you hope can stick with the big guys. It's not bringing in a Jeff Skinner or a Victor Arvidsson or a Corey Perry or any number of veterans that they brought in that hopefully, you know, will revamp their career and play in the top six, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for guys to play with McDavid and Draisaitl. And so far, they have Zach Hyman. That was a big loss last year in the playoffs, him being out. That would have been a difference maker. They thought Evander Kane maybe could stick with the top six. That didn't really work out. Podkolzin could potentially be that guy. I think he has the ability to play up in that group. But all in all, it's been McDavid, Draisaitl, and Hyman. And then the Nuge has been spotted in and out of there, but he's more of a centerman. So they haven't had a consistent, even top three, to roll out in Edmonton. But this year is different. And this is why I think this could be the year they win the Stanley Cup. They made two interesting trades this offseason. They bring in Isaac Howard from Tampa Bay. And Isaac Howard is a very, very good young player. Played in Michigan this year, won the Hobey Baker Trophy. They got him from Tampa Bay. He's a natural goal scorer. And this is why I think he will fit in nicely in that top six. And it will give the Edmonton Oilers the luxury to not force McDavid and Draisaitl to be on the same line all the time. Yes, it's nice when you can throw them out there after a penalty kill, start of a period, end of the game. That's great. That's a luxury that you have to add to put those beasts together. But on a consistent basis, game after game, you now have the ability, if it works out, to have Isaac Howard play with Connor McDavid and Zach Hyman. And then it gives the ability to have Draisaitl playing with Podkolzin and another young kid we're going to talk about in a second, or vice versa. You can move Isaac Howard down wherever you want to work this. But Isaac Howard, he's not some just young kid coming out of juniors who's a little green under the gills. He is a man. I think he's 22 years old. He has a man body. He's fast as hell. He's a natural goal scorer. He can play top line minutes, and he will slide in nicely in that top six. So he's one of the reasons why I'm optimistic for the Edmonton Oilers this coming season. The other reason is Matthew Savoy. And you talk about why franchises struggle and why franchises succeed. GMs go out and they scour the market and they see, okay, which GM isn't utilizing their prospects? Which guys maybe aren't fitting on a team? And typically, the teams that struggle are the teams that don't find ways to make good players work. And case in point is this trade. The Edmonton Oilers, obviously cap-strapped, so they had to make some moves. They go out and get Matthew Savoy from the Buffalo Sabres. And yeah, they had to give up a little bit of assets, but they're also shedding cap at the same time, so you're killing two birds with one stone. You lose Ryan McLeod, rightfully so, but his ceiling is a third-line center, in my opinion. And he could put up maybe 30, 40 points. That's where he lives. That's great. But if you're the Edmonton Oilers and you're trying to win a Stanley Cup and you have a glaring need of a top six forward, you look at the Buffalo Sabres and you go, oh, they're not using Matthew Savoy very well. He's a ninth overall pick in 2022. So he's still really, really young. He was just down in the depth chart, Buffalo, because Buffalo's, their cupboards are stocked with prospects. That's the one thing that they have going for them. They have a ton of prospects coming through the system. And Matthew Savoy, for whatever reason, hasn't really been given that opportunity to play in Buffalo. So Edmonton Oilers, they see this. Stan Bowman, as much as I, you know, criticize him, he sees this and he just picks their pocket. So he could potentially have gotten a first line right winger from the Buffalo Sabres for a third line center. And this guy is still, he's still green, you guys. He was drafted 3 years ago, for Pete's sake, in the first round, ninth overall. This is a high quality pick that the Buffalo Sabres are just giving up for a third line center. I don't understand it from Kevin Adams' point of view. I love it from the Edmonton Oilers' point of view. So you go from a team that has not a lot of depth, a team that relies on two players, a team that got poached a year before for a Dylan Holloway, who would, by the way, look really, really good with the Edmonton Oilers right now. A young, power, fast forward who can score. That's exactly what they're trying to get with Isaac Howard and Matthew Savoy. But that's a whole other case. That was a drop ball for the Edmonton Oilers in all senses of the word. But moving on to this year, you now have potentially two good first lines. And a solid third line with the Nugent Hopkins and maybe a Trent Frederick and another guy they just added on, Andrew Mangiapane, who did okay with Washington last year. Obviously, really, really solid with the Calgary Flames, coming into an Edmonton environment where maybe he does get bumped up for the first two lines. maybe if Howard or Savoy, their development doesn't flourish right away, Mangiapane is easily could be in the first two lines. He did that with Calgary for years. No problem for him. So the Edmonton Oilers all of a sudden have that luxury of having a little bit of depth. And we've said this last year and years prior. Oh, they got depth. They got depth. We will see how that translates into the playoffs. Will Knobloch have the intestinal fortitude to say, you know what, we're going to roll four lines. Instead of giving Connor McDavid 28 minutes, we're going to give him 21, 22 minutes. We're going to keep him fresh. Because you saw in the playoffs, the poor guy was out there 5 minutes in a row, and he was gassed. And so was Dreisaitl, and so was the Nuge. You have to give these guys breaks, and you have to let them breathe so they're at 100%. And the back end, they signed Evan Bouchard. That was the big move this offseason, to get that guy locked up. They have a solid decor for the most part. Why they won't win the cup? Depth, using them appropriately. And more importantly, the bigger reason is goalies. What do you say for a team that the reason, one of the major reasons they lost the Stanley Cup last year was between the pipes? Stuart Skinner was atrocious. Calvin Picard came in and went on this heroic run, 7-0. Then he came down to earth pretty fast in the Stanley Cup Finals. And Stuart Skinner could not find his footing quickly enough, and they lose the Stanley Cup Finals in Game 7 because of the goaltenders in a few games. So it's an issue that needs to be addressed. It obviously has not been addressed. There wasn't a lot of goaltenders available other than John Gibson, who went to the Detroit Red Wings. But I don't know. Speaking of Hockey Canada, there's a young goaltender, Carter Hart, hasn't played in a few years. He's been connected to the Edmonton Oilers. Potentially that could be an answer. I like that fit. You can probably get him for pretty cheap, put him in a good situation. He wouldn't have to play a lot. Stuart Skinner, I think, is still good. Calvin Picard is still good. But can they win the Stanley Cup? I don't know. I think they can. But the last two times out, they have not. I don't know. And then the window for the Edmonton Oilers. How big is that window? And that's another time for another show. But four guys right now make up 50% of the cap. I don't know if that's a recipe for success. All right, moving on. The Toronto Maple Leafs. Out, obviously, the big story is Mitch Marner. I called it 2 years ago. Everybody knows it. Everybody who listens to the show knows it. I said he will walk for nothing. Well, he didn't walk for nothing. They got Nicholas Waugh, which at the end of the day is a good piece for a guy who was going to go for free. Nicholas Waugh is a very, very serviceable third line center, big body, plays the game the right way, plays physical, plays Craig Berube type hockey. And I think that's a trend of all the guys they brought in. They play Craig Berube type hockey. And we saw Craig Berube type hockey when the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup, and now he's fully entrenched with the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is it. He's been there for a few years now. The learning curve is gone. All the wrinkles and everything should have been ironed out by now. This is year three going into his tenure, maybe year four, probably year three. So this is it. Now he has his guys. He has been a part of offseason acquisitions and drafts and trades. So this is his team. How will it succeed? I don't know. So when you lose a Marner making 10 schmil, you bring in Michelli, you bring in Dakota Joshua, you bring in Michael Pezzetta, and you sign Nicholas Roy. So those guys are the replacements for a Mitch Marner. Will it work? I don't know. Why they can win the cup is because they have a more playoff-tested, battled, harder team to play against. Dakota Joshua, love the way he plays. I think he's I know he's a physical body who has some hands. Can he stay healthy? We'll see. Nicholas Waugh, same thing. He gives them a huge option. You don't see the star guys killing penalties anymore. They can have a shutdown type line with Dakota Joshua, Nicholas Waugh, and maybe you throw McMahon on the side, on the wing. That can be your shutdown line. You got Lorenz, you got Lawton. You have guys who Craig Berube likes that you can throw out there the last minute of the game when you're up by the goal. They can kill penalties. You can save Matthews. You can save Nylander. You can save Tavares and just give them all offensive faceoffs. Give them the greatest chance to score. So I think that's an asset to have those guys in your roster. Another reason why they won't win the cup is just motivation. This is a season for Austin Matthews where it's all on him. You've been kind of protected for a long time. Your first season as a captain, you had a great season. You flame out in the playoffs, and everybody was distracted by the Mitch Marner chaos. Will he sign? Will he won't sign? The trade, the offers, him declining, the offseason. That all shielded Austin Matthews from his first season as a captain. Well, now it's all eyes on you. You are squarely in the crosshairs of the media, of all the pressure, of everything that comes along with being the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. How will you respond? Optimistically, I'm hoping that he rises to the occasion. But based on history, not even recent history, his total history in the NHL, I don't know, you guys. I don't know if he has that in him. Johnny T obviously hasn't rubbed off on him. Not that Johnny T was the epitome of a leader at all. But with the motivation of Mitch Marner being gone, with the pressure in Toronto, with the additions to the roster, you know, champions who are now on this roster, guys trying to help him out, I like their chances. I don't mind this team. I think they're still growing. But the biggest reason I think they will succeed in the playoffs and win a Stanley Cup, I know Joseph Woll was good. I know he's a very good goaltender for this team. Anthony Stolarz is better. Anthony Stolarz is a game changer. And him going down in the playoffs, getting concussed by Sam Bennett, that was the death knell for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think everybody can agree on that. That's why they lost. If he's in net, they win that series and they potentially go on to win the Stanley Cup. That's how I see it. So if he's healthy and this team's rolling, I would give them a very, very good chance to win the Stanley Cup. Now, why they won't? I think this has been a glaring weakness for this team for a long time. And we touched on it with Marty McSorley even in our interview. Do you need a puck-moving defenseman to win in today's game? Ideally, yes. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think they've tried to address that issue over the years. Obviously, Morgan Rielly has been their biggest threat. I don't think he's good enough to be that type of 1A puck-moving defenseman. You bring in Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I think he's a little, you know, old in the tooth, long in the tooth. He's pretty old. You don't have another guy who is an offensive threat. You got Tanev. You got Carlo. You got McCabe. You got Simone Benoit. Nobody really is strong at moving the puck, who can lug the puck out of your zone, who can make a guy miss, who is going to run your power play. And you lose Mitch Marner, who was running your power play. Who do you use? Who is your guy? Is it Morgan Rielly? Is that enough of a threat? Because we know in the playoffs how important the power play is. And we saw the Toronto Maple Leafs flame out with their power play. I think that's a huge issue that they haven't addressed that is impossible to address. You have to do it either through the draft or overly pay somebody or pick someone's pocket. But I just don't see them being able to address that situation. So you do what you can. You're Brad Treveling. You did a great job this offseason. You navigated the Mitch Marner fiasco. You bring in talent. You bring in guys who you think who can help. But the biggest weakness in my eyes, it's not the back end. It's not the goaltenders. It's not the forwards. It's the top guys.
Your Starbucks is ready. Beans ground. Milk frothed. Shots pulled. Velvety milk poured into a double shot of dark perfection and... oof, that's the good stuff. The baristas are ready. The finest coffee beans are ready. The Starbucks you love is ready. Hello again from the Starbucks Coffee Company.
It's Austin Matthews. That's it. Can your captain, can your star player, can he deliver you to the promised land? I don't think he can. I don't think he has it in him. I really don't. I firmly believe he is a superstar in this league, but he does not have that extra gear. He does not have that it factor in your guts that a Barkov or a Matthews or a McKinnon, that fire. You know what I mean? Where you look at him and he's taken over the game. Not just for a couple shifts, not for a period. He's pissed and he's not going to take it. He's just going to go and he's just going to manhandle people. That's what superstars do. And I don't think he has it in. Prime Ovechkin had it. Crosby. I've seen it. I played against it. I don't think Matthews has it in him. All right, moving on. The Ottawa Senators. Out? Nobody's out. This team is relatively the same. The big move that they did this offseason was they re-signed Claude Giroux. He was a highly coveted veteran, obviously. he's a guy you want on your team. And it was a tough negotiation. Steve Staios, he's not going to overpay for guys. And he signed him to a $2 million one-year deal with lots of loaded incentives. And they bring in Lars Eller. Everybody knows how much I love Lars Eller. Guy's a jerk, but he's a good, serviceable fourth line player. And I think he will fit in nicely with this Ottawa Senators roster. This team is good. They didn't do very much this offseason. They did not need to do very much this offseason. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to win a Stanley Cup, but I think they are going to be dangerous. You know, you have a full season with the Alaskan Assassin coming in and just being a good second line center for this roster. You have good forwards up and down this lineup. Your defense is solid. Your goaltender is there. The one thing they need, and they have some cap space, but again, just like Toronto needing a puck-moving defenseman, I think Ottawa needs another piece in the top six. I don't think David Perron is a good top six guy. Fabian Zetterlund, as much as I love him, friend of the show, I think he's more suited for a third-line role on a Stanley Cup contender. They need to bring in one more piece, and they have some cap space. They have $4 or $5 million left to spend, and they have some pieces, you know, prospects that they could deal. But I like Steve Staios. He didn't force anything. He didn't go out and try to just overpay for somebody or just out of panic get somebody who's not really a top six guy. So I like what he did. He helped Pat. He brought in Jordan Spence from LA. I like him. He's a good puck-moving right-handed shot defenseman. He fits in nicely. Nick Jensen will be out for the foreseeable future. He's coming off of hip surgery. So it gives Carter Yakimchuk time to maybe make his debut in the NHL. He's seventh overall pick in 2024. I like that. The one player who I think they could get, and then I read this a while ago. I don't know when I read it. Mason McTavish from the Anaheim Ducks. Negotiations with him and Pat Verbeek not really progressing. He's still an RFA, so he will sign eventually. Or they could trade him. We know how Pat Verbeek likes to negotiate with young players. He hates it. He trades them. He does not like young players asking for money or more money than they deserve it. So if I'm Steve Staios, who had Mason McTavish with the Hamilton Bulldogs in the OHL, they went to the Mem Cup together. He has some familiarity with him. I'd go out and get him. Third overall pick from 2021. You can lock him in for 50, 60 points. That's his floor, his ceiling. Who knows? Playing with some players. The guy could be a solid, solid first line guy for years to come. I'm kicking the tires on him. So that's why they will win the Stanley Cup. They're a great team. They had to add a piece, but if they do, they're a legit threat. They put a huge scare in Toronto in the first round last year. Some thought they were going to win. Yours truly. Why they won't win? I think they're still growing. I think they're still developing. As crazy as that sounds, and in the age of these guys, I think Tkachuk and Stützle and Cousins even, and Batherson and Pinto and Sanderson, I think last year was good for them, making the playoffs and losing the way that they lost to the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I still think they need to grow. You know, maybe take it a little more serious. But that's the only thing that's holding them back. I wasn't sold on Ottawa. If you listen to the show, I always thought they had reached their peak. I don't know. I think I could be wrong. But this year will be a huge year for them. Can they build off of last year's success? I think it has to come from the big boys up front. It has to be Stützle. It has to be Tkachuk. It has to be Sanderson on the back end. It has to be Batherson. It has to be those guys to drive this team. It can't be Giroux. It can't be Pinto. It has to be those top end guys to take this team and go, okay, last year was good. It's not enough. We have to grow. We have to win the first round. We have to make a push because this is it. This is your team. I've said it for years. I didn't think they had it in them. Last year, they proved me wrong. Can you take that next step? I don't know. We'll see. All right, moving on. Montreal Canadiens. Oh, gosh. When I'm by myself, I don't recognize the time, but it's already been a half an hour. I got to go. I still got to get to the Hockey Canada stuff, and I want to devote a little bit of time to that. So we might breeze through these a little bit. But the Montreal Canadiens, I am bullish on this team. Very, very excited about what's going on with this roster. Players out, not really that much. Emil Heinemann, he was dealt in the trade for Noah Dobson. That's the biggest addition on this team. A huge trade before the draft this season. Kent Hughes goes out and gets arguably the best available defenseman in the league. I think he had, what did he have, something crazy like 71 points 2 years ago? I don't have it in front of me. He gives up a huge haul for this guy. Two first rounders and Emil Heinemann. They signed him then to an 8-year, $9.5 million deal. That's what you do. That's what you do when you get your hands on a right-handed puck-moving defenseman who's only 25 years old. You lock him up long-term because these guys don't grow on trees. They are unicorns, especially the fact that he's a right-handed defenseman. That is a coveted, coveted position in the NHL. And when you get one, you hold on to him. You hold on to him all you can because, damn it, they're hard to come by. You're going to slot him alongside maybe Lane Hudson, maybe Caden Gooley, Mike Matheson. You have a solid left side in Montreal. All of a sudden, you add Dobson. You got Struble. You got Carrier. You got a good young prospect coming up in David Reinbacher who could potentially slot into that second right wing, right D-man spot. It's a very good D-core. They are stacked. They're young. And they can all move the puck. They're not just dumb plodding defensemen out there who are just defensive-minded. No, these guys are solid. They can get up in the rush. Obviously, Lane Hudson is just dynamic. Another move they made this offseason, which was a great move. Because the back end was so solid, they had Logan Mailloux. Obviously, controversial defenseman. Great, great defenseman. You don't need him because your back end's already stocked. You trade him to St. Louis for Zach Bolduc. Perfect. This is a young kid, 22 years old, had 19 goals last year. 19 goals in his first full season with St. Louis. You grab him. You grab him, you grab Dobson. The beautiful thing is you're getting these guys who are the same age as your core. You got Suzuki, you got Caulfield, Slakovsky. Your core is not too young where it's like, oh, we still have time to build. They're in their prime. And you're getting players who are also in their prime, which is really, really hard to do. GMs like to hold on to your assets. So if you're able, and Kent Hughes has done a masterful job of this, if you're able to go out and get players who are in their prime, 25 years old, 22 years old, have played hundreds of games in the NHL, they know their way around a rink. That's a difficult thing to do. And Dobson and Bolduc fit right in with this core and just dovetail in. And then they can grow with them and they can win with them. Their D-core is stacked. I like their goaltending tandem. I like what they have up front. The one thing they need is just some time to gel. Just some time. Kirby Dach will be healthy this year. Ivan Demidov will have a full season in the NHL. He's going to explode onto the scene. You have two solid young lines up front. Caulfield, Suzuki, Slakovsky were incredible last year. You got Bolduc, Dach, and Demidov. It's a dangerous second line. Average age is like 23. If they go, they're going to be very dangerous. You have a good fourth line with Anderson, Gallagher, and Jake Evans. You have Patrick Laine on the power play. The guy's a legit sniper. Alex Newhook is a good third line center. You have a solid lineup. If Montembeault and Dobish can play the way they did last year, I don't see any reason why this team doesn't progress and make a push for the Stanley Cup. They have cap space. They have prospects if they want to make a move at the deadline. Next year's free agent class is absolutely loaded. Who wouldn't want to go play in Montreal with these young guys? With this talent that they have, it's a dangerous, dangerous team. And they will be, you know, they'll be a team to reckon with this year. I fully believe they'll be in the mix in the playoffs. It's exciting. All right, moving on, the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously not the outcome they wanted last year in the playoffs. First place in the Western Conference, breezing through. Didn't go out the way they want. Lost in the second round. What do you do? What do you do with this roster? Mark Scheifele's there. Kyle Connor's there. You re-up Gabe Vilardi. You have a solid NHL team. Obviously, you first place in the West last year. Like, what more do you need to do? Well, I think they make the best move. Not the best, but potentially one of the most impactful moves this offseason, bringing in Johnny Toews. I think the one thing you could say they missed is a little accountability. Is just a veteran presence. This team has been good forever, and they can't figure it out. They don't know how. They don't know how to win in difficult moments. And I played with Johnny Toews. He was my captain. If one guy can get the most out of this team, if one guy can get them out of a funk or can snap that bad thoughts out of Connor Hellebuck or to just get rid of the bad feelings that they've had in the past, is Johnny Toews. I think he plays a third line center role. I don't think he comes in and lights the world on fire, but that's not why he's supposed to be here. He is supposed to come in and just guide these guys. They're not young. They want to win a Stanley Cup. That's it. Their window is very, very small. And they know it's shrinking. So he needs to come in and just not make a huge impact on the ice. It's the off the ice stuff that I think they brought him in for. And if the on ice stuff comes through, it's just gravy. You go out and you get a Gustav Nyquist. He could slot in on that second line with Perfetti and Nemestikov. That's a good third line. Then you got Niederreiter and Iafallo, and you got a great team. So I don't think you needed to go out and reinvent the wheel and bring in all kinds of talent. The talent is there. They just need to focus it and make it good. They could use some help on the back end. I think Morrissey is a lone wolf back there, but they have serviceable defensemen. Pionk is good, and DeMello is good, and Sandberg is good. It's not a terrible back end. I think Hellebuyck makes up for a lot of their defensive efficiencies, but it's just, can they do it? Can they avoid just stepping on their own foot and shooting themselves in the foot and just play that they can play the way they play in the regular season? That's their own issue, where they just stay flame out, and their own biggest enemy is themselves in the playoffs. They can't do it. I think Johnny Toews will come in and right the ship for that. All right, the last one, I don't know. The Vancouver Canucks. Do you guys honestly think they have a chance to win the Stanley Cup this year? Do you think they have slayed the demons? They've got rid of the bad feelings in that locker room. They re-signed Brock Besser. You bring in Evander Kane. You re-up Connor Garland. You try to make Quinn Hughes happy so you can re-sign him, but it's pretty much the same guys in the back end. Marcus Pettersson is there. You got Ronick, Myers. Yeah. What is there more to say? It's just, it comes down to, can they just stop being a soap opera of a team? Can Elias Pettersson be happy and be healthy and play hard? Can, Jake DeBrusk be that guy that he was in Boston for short glimpses? I don't know. I don't think this team is going to be very good. I'll be honest. I really don't. But they're the type of team that just when you kind of, think they're going to be garbage, they'll turn around and rip off a great season. You count them out, and all of a sudden they just turn it around. Because I thought they were going to be contenders and great team forever, and they just let me down. And now is the year where I just think they're finally going to fall off, and they're going to rebuild, and they're going to be a lottery team. And this is the year they'll come out and just be flipping unstoppable. So we'll see how that goes. But I don't see them being a team to be reckoned with at the end of the season. I definitely don't see them being a Stanley Cup contender. All right, moving on.
Guys, you've probably heard of Viagra or Cialis, and maybe even tried them. If you're looking for something beyond the usual pill, meet Rougi et Ready. Other companies rely on similar ingredients to support blood flow, but Rougi et Ready is next-gen prescription treatment designed to help amplify the brain and increase blood flow. If the usual pills aren't doing the trick, Rougi et Ready could be the answer. It's a 3-in-1 formula. It dissolves under your tongue to absorb fast, so you'll be ready in just 15 minutes on average, and it can lasts up to 36 hours. That means you can stay confident, present, and in control when the moment's right. Want proof? Over 150,000 men have made the switch, and you can read their reviews right on the site. Getting started is simple. Rougi et connects you with a board-certified doctor 100% online, and if prescribed, your treatment ships quickly to your door. Connect with a provider at rougiet.com/gloves to see if Rougi et Ready prescription is right for you. You can use code GLOVES to get 15% off today. That's rougiet.com/gloves and use promo code GLOVES to get 15% off today. Head to rougiet.com/gloves and use code GLOVES to get 15% off today. Individual results may vary with prescription treatment. Compounded drugs are permitted to be prescribed under federal law, but are not FDA approved and do not undergo FDA safety, effectiveness, or manufacturing review. Please visit the Rougi et website for full safety information.
Hockey Canada. So, I grew up in Canada, St. Catharines, Ontario kid. My goal was to make the OHL. I idolized those guys. I would see them in the rinks. I would go to games. I loved it. I played in St. Catharines. Obviously, I'd go see Junior B games, the St. Catharines Falcons. I played Junior B for the Thorold Blackhawks. That's who I wanted to be. And this Hockey Canada case has, I think, brought to light a lot of the issues with hockey culture. And it is changing, but a lot of it is still the same. And it's getting worse. And it's getting worse because of the internet, social media, being able to have access to these guys and the influence that they have in their small towns where they play. And I think we have to break it down of what is
what is the hockey image? When you think of what a hockey player is, especially the junior ages, there's a distinct difference between the juniors and professionals. And it's obviously because of the age. But when I was 12, 13, 14, you know, what I thought a hockey player was probably not a great role model to have, but they were my role models. Endless amounts of women, partying, drinking, you know, just get pretty much getting and doing whatever you want. That's what I thought it was like to play in junior hockey in the OHL. That's what my goal was. I want to go. I want to meet women. I want to play hockey. I want to go to parties. I want to be a hockey player. I want to grow my hair long. I want to chew tobacco. I want to be a hockey guy. And that's what I wanted to do. And I actively strive to do that. And, you know, good, bad, or otherwise, as a young male, I don't think that's a terrible thing to want. You know, boys want girls. That's kind of, it's always been there forever and always. Should I see ambulance going by? I apologize. But should I guess there's one thing to want that and to have the idea of what it is. And there's another thing to actually get there, and it's worse than what you imagine it to be. And I've talked to people. I talked to Dan Carcillo intimately. I played with him in Chicago. I've done shows with him. I've spent a lot of good time with him. He is still affected by what happened to him with the Sarnia sting years and years ago. He's obviously a part of that class action lawsuit against the CHL, alleging that they routinely hazed him. They were bullying, physical and verbal harassment, physical assault, sexual harassment, and sexual assault. And a lot of the times, you know, you feel pressured into doing these things. And I went through it in junior C and junior B, where you go to these rookie parties or you go to these parties and the older guys on the team. And that's the weird thing about junior hockey is you're coming in. And when I was in junior C, I was 14 years old, 15 years old. In junior B, I was 16 years old. So the age range between guys, I'm playing with 20-year-olds. I remember in junior C, I was 14 and 15 years old going to the bar after the game, and I'm using a fake ID and I'm going in and I'm drinking with grownups. And here I am like a child, and I was big. So I didn't think anything of it, but it shouldn't, you know, is it appropriate? No, not at all. But it was normal. It's just the way we did things. And so Dan Carcillo, he had some time to reflect and get some guidance. And he said, that's not right. And so he is suing the CHL. And I still think it's ongoing, but there is a problem there. And then it just came to light with this Canada hockey scandal, where the five players, it was Dylan Dubé, Michael McLeod, Alex Formenton, Carter Hart, and Cal Foote, after the World Junior Championships, they get into a situation in the hotel in London with the young girl where things happen. I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but they engage in activities. The boys say it was consensual. She said it wasn't consensual. Alcohol was involved. All in all, you go to trial and they get acquitted. And now she is, you know, almost being lambasted in the media for the boy who cried wolf and making up these stories and trying to go after them for money. And that brings up a whole other ball of wax of, What are we doing? If now, I don't know. I have eight daughters, and I always think like, and this is a whole nother thing where the boys, this is their idols, right? So I'm a teenager in high school, and I look at these guys in the World Juniors. I'm like, I want to be that guy. The girls, they idolize these boys too, because everybody puts these guys on a pedestal. In all these small towns in the whole country, when the World Juniors, they put these guys on a pedestal. They can do whatever they want. And so the girls see that and they go, do whatever it takes, man, to get with these guys. And what happens is they just throw away all their morals. And as a father, two girls, if my daughter were in that situation, I would be A, mortified for her. Like, what did I do wrong that you're in this situation? But as like, how do you move on from that? You're getting just trained by five guys in a hotel room and you go there under your own volition just because you want to be with hockey players? You know, I there's a whole, I don't know. It just bothers me to the core, where we idolize these guys, these young players feel pressured to live this type of lifestyle, to do these type of things, and everybody just gives them a pass because they're good at hockey. Like, I think we have to do a better job of just saying, that's not what you should be doing, you know? Like, should you be, you know, having sex with multiple guys in one night? If you're the guy, should you be doing this to a random girl at 18 years old, 17 years old, 16 years old? No, I don't think so. And there's a whole other broad topic to be had about pornography and sexualization of young girls and just kids growing up too fast. Like, I have a teenage daughter. And I do my damnedest to shield her from all this stuff. And everybody's like, well, they're going to find out sometime. Maybe. But why do we have to throw it at them so young? And so, like, we got rid of all technology. The stuff we do have, I have, you know, blockers on it to block all this stuff. Because I think just kids grow up too fast. And we put them in situations that they shouldn't be in. And Canada Hockey and the CHL are prime examples of kids being put in situations that they're just over their head. A 14, 15, 16-year-old kid shouldn't have to be, you know, be hazed by grown-ups saying, strip off your clothes, go sit in a bathroom, or else, you know, you're off the team. If you're 15 years old and you're put in that situation, you want to impress the vets. You want to be part of the group. Because what happens? You think everything is life or death. And if you don't do that, you're going to be off the team, and then your life's over. And so you do it. And some guys can move past that, but other guys, it just kills them. Like, Dan Carcillo still has issues with it. And he was one of the lucky ones who got out and made the NHL. There's probably thousands of people who didn't get as far as him who just have to live with that the rest of their lives. Oh, it's just a part of the hockey culture. Yeah, but does it have to be? I don't know. I'm not sitting here pounding the drum like everything's wrong, everything's dire, but I just think we can potentially do better. Is it okay to maybe do better, to ask for more? Like, I've been hazed. I've been through it. And there's times where I stood up for myself and I said, I ain't doing that. But there's times where I did stuff and I wake up in the morning, I go, that sucked. Like, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to wear a diaper for the whole party. Not very fun. But you do it because you want to be a part of the group. And you don't want to be, you know, outcasted. And that's what happens. And so I just think we can strive to do better as a hockey community. And like it or lump it, I don't care. But young girls shouldn't be getting trains ran on them by boys. Young boys shouldn't be having sex like that in that situation. We shouldn't be forcing people to drink. We shouldn't be forcing people to stand in a bathroom that they pissed down a hole for 12-hour bus rides. They're just, these are basic things that we shouldn't be doing. So, I don't know. That's just my take on it. I think the poor girl is being raked over the coals. Maybe she's getting some bad advice saying you can do a money grab. And now it's just blown up in her face. I think the boys, their life has been ruined because of this, because of a decision they made when they were young in a hotel room. And, you know, one guy got a girl and they sent out some text messages. The next thing you know, here we are. It's just, it's too much. And I think it's all built up to this, where we've just accepted it for a long time. We've turned a blind eye to it because it's just, oh, they're hockey players. We love watching hockey. They're going to make the NHL someday. Everything's good. There's more to life than the NHL. There's more to life than playing hockey. And I think when you can take a step away from that and realize these are just kids. They're just kids. I know a lot of you listening have kids. It's like, do you want your 14, 15, 16-year-old kids doing what these kids do? I sure as hell don't want my kids doing that. So I don't know. That I'm going to jump off my pedestal. Hopefully it didn't upset anybody, but that's just my take. I appreciate your guys' support. We'll be back at it next week. Have a good start of your August. And yeah, hockey season's around the corner, everybody. It's going to be exciting. Talk to you later. Cheers.
Your Starbucks is ready. Beans ground. Milk frothed. Shots pulled. Velvety milk poured into a double shot of dark perfection and... oof, that's the good stuff. The baristas are ready. The finest coffee beans are ready. The Starbucks you love is ready. Hello again from the Starbucks Coffee Company.